Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to part two of the Beetlejuice Ensemble episode with Elliot Maddox, Ramon Owens, and Dana Steingold. You listened to a long introduction at the beginning of the first part, so I'll just skip all that now and get straight to it. And now, everyone, please enjoy part two.
Here you go. One, two, three.
What's impressive, though, what I was going to continue saying earlier was that you're doing multiple versions, like morning, afternoon, and night, whatever. But as ensemble and as swings and as standbys and whatnot, you may be rehearsing different things for different tracks all at the same time. And that's just impressive, beyond impressive. And I truly think that, like, ensemble, just the backbone of theater, you know, because everything rides on all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they often work the longest out. I mean, you guys were there so many hours restaging numbers.
So many hours.
The audience feedback, though, like at the stage door and whatnot, you touched on like the cosplay and the younger generation now with social media, but the show itself comes with like the older generation coming for nostalgia, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got two different generations kind of hitting the show from opposite sides. Do you find different reactions from different folks for different reasons?
I just think it's exciting that, again, Beetlejuice, it's a little crass, but you have parents and children there, whereas a lot of the naughty jokes the children don't get, you know, and the parents are cracking up, or in some of the sillier things the children are just kind of laughing at, which I don't think is something that families get to do too often, you know? Mm-hmm. I think there are certain shows that are more children's theater that are Broadway shows that parents don't get to enjoy as much. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fun that you can bring your entire family and everybody have a really good time.
And that's been kind of an unexpected thing for us, especially with DC. It was, I would say if DC was rated like NC-17, then now what we're doing is rated PG-13.
It was that different?
There was a parental advisory in DC.
It was very different.
And Dana and I can speak to the fact that like the version in DC was by far the cleanest
version.
It was so raunchy when we started. Yeah, because it was just fun and kind of like, it was a different thing. But I think they found the best version to really tell the story.
Yeah.
And to
and keep the humor.
But bring it to such a wide audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think along with girls and parents and their children, what's interesting to me is I've never done a show that I think has actually successfully kind of reached that like straight white male bro crowd.
Sure.
And they love it. My husband, not calling him a bro, but my husband has seen the show. He's never seen anything I've done more than once. He's just like, he like comes and stuff, you know, he's seen it the opening and the closing and loves it. He has seen this show like maybe 12 times. Yeah. He's seen me go on for Lydia 3 times. Uh-huh. He's seen me do the Girl Scout 14 times. He loves it. And the way he talks about it to his friends, it's like actually genuine.
Yeah.
And all our friends who come, it's just so, it's mind blowing. I don't think most shows are able to capture that audience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they really like it. There's a certain sort of SNL feel, I think, to the whole thing. And I think people know how to respond to that kind of humor. It's not like a classic musical theater, like joke punchline setup situation.
Well, and we set it up from the very beginning that, it's a musical. We know it's going to be stupid at times, but just bear with us. You're in good hands. Like that's the whole, that's why the opening is so successful, I think, because it's like, it pokes fun at the musical. It's aware. And it's just, you know, you're in good hands already. And you're just going to like have a wild time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Breaks the fourth wall
right away.
And you know, Alex is interacting with the audience, and it seems like you're right. It does attract a different type of bro, if we want to call it that.
Well, it is. I think it's a great show to introduce someone to theater that didn't necessarily go out to see theater.
It also feels cool. Like the thing that I think Alex Timbers does so well too. I mean, there's 5,000 things that I could name, but one of the amazing things he does, I think, with most of his shows, is he creates environments, right?
Yeah.
So the second you walk into that theater, you feel like you're at a cool event, mm-hmm. like you're at the Box downtown or something yeah. different or weird, and not like walking into a theater to see a proper musical. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think that has set us up for success before we even begin. And then we have Matt Stein's music that he orchestrated, mm-hmm. and you just feel like you're in a whole different mm-hmm. place. And you're like, where am I? Hand me a drink.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
ready.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
And P.S., Matt Stein's pre-show music was just released on oh, YouTube yeah. today. So check if you have out. A Halloween right. party,
play
it's the
it.
Perfect under oh, music. Yeah.
yeah, I read that. I got to go grab that.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to get into a couple other things that you guys do. So, yeah. Elliot, of course, also part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Why, yes.
With your podcast, Equity One.
Yes, yes.
What is an Equity One, for those who don't know?
Okay, so Equity One is slang for the drink you have between a matinee and an evening show. Like, you know, if you're catching up with your friend, you're just going to go have a quick beer and a bite to eat.
Yeah.
And you're still fine to do your second show.
Yeah. Why did you decide to start your podcast?
My best friend Caleb and I, who's my co-host on Equity One.
Caleb Dickey.
Caleb yeah. Dickey. We always, we were roommates in college. We were always really close. And we always wanted to do something creative together. You know, there were ideas for a little web series or like little ideas that we had always kind of tossed around that never felt like a good fit. And we were FaceTiming once, and my boyfriend Michael was there. And he was like listening to our back and forth and just like cracking up because we just like to, we yeah. just have a good, like, you know, back and forth. We have a good time talking to each other. And he was like, that you guys should have a podcast because just listening to you all made me laugh. And I was like, oh my God, that's literally the perfect thing. And it just kind of fell into kind of the perfect way for us to do something together, talk to people, and, yeah, so it's just our little creative baby that we have together.
That's fun. I enjoy listening to it.
Well, as for those of you who don't listen, we refer to Alan lovingly as our podcast dad because and as we have joined the amazing Broadway Podcast Network and get to record in this amazing studio now, Alan helps bring our podcast to life in a much fancier and nicer way than we ever did with our, like, you know, portable mic and prayer. But we have so much fun with you in the room too. We're glad you have a mic now and can talk to
us. Thanks. I'm blushing. Thank you. So Ramon, you were saying you teaching, and what else do you do, like stuff outside of the show? And hit the old mic. Start that again. So outside of the show, Ramon, you said you were doing teaching and stuff, and you do things with kids?
Yeah, I teach every once in a while. My friend Robert Hartwell has a business called The Broadway Collective that I am an official dance captain for. I usually help with choreography. I'll do master classes with students, a lot of Q&As. Right now we're doing college pre-screening, which is something that students have to do now.
Brand new.
It's so crazy. College students have to make a video of them doing a monologue, a dance, and singing that they submit to colleges before they even get a proper audition for an institution. So this part of the program that I'm working on now, we pretty much help students build footage for their pre-screen. And usually, well, I've got a cute little 3-year-old Maltipoo named Miles that I spend a lot of my time with.
He's the best.
He comes to the theater sometimes on two-show days. And usually take a lot of class, really. Yeah.
Cool.
Honestly, though, I haven't felt like I've had a lot of time lately.
October is a busy month for us.
Right?
Yeah.
It's been very busy. So I'm kind of, you know, re-getting my footing down as far as time outside of the show.
Yeah. Well, this is a weird Sunday night we're recording here anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Sukkot's tomorrow, Indigenous Peoples' Day tomorrow. So for whatever reason, you guys don't have an afternoon matinee. You've got an evening show on a Sunday.
Yes.
Which is weird.
I think because of the people have time off for the Monday, a lot of times they're looking for something to do on a Sunday night with their families if the kids don't have school. It's worked for us in the past with holidays, our producers are smart in capitalizing on when people are going to come see the show.
Mm-hmm. Dana, you also are the voice of Sarahline Timbers on Welcome to the Wayne.
Yes.
An animated show.
Yeah.
That's pretty recent, in the last like 2 years, right?
Yeah. Well, it started as it was their online streaming platform that Nickelodeon started, and it was just going to be accessible by the app. And we did a season, and then about 9 months later, they said, we loved it. We want to put it on television. And then we've done 3 seasons since.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a fun, it seems like it's a fun kind of character voicey sort of thing for you.
Yeah. It's essentially me, but drier and a little bit heightened, and kind of how I am with my siblings. She's kind of like a powerful, like Angelica from the Rugrats character, but with smarts. And yeah, she's the baby sister.
So Susie Carmichael.
Yes. Yes. She's the baby sister who knows way more than the brothers. Yeah. So she's a very cool, like, female empowerment, tech savvy kind of lady.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Can you, because I think voiceover is so interesting. Can you talk, like, you do a season of a show. What is that like for you? Like, do you do that in like a day or like?
That was my next question.
Yeah. Don't put a podcast host on your podcast.
He will steal your question. No, you usually get booked for like a session, and you'll sometimes, depending on how much you do, they can do 2 episodes in a session, but I would say it usually takes about 1 hour to 2 hours to bang out an episode for like a 22-minute episode, because it's such a different experience than theater. Every line is numbered, and you'll do each line like 7 different times, 7 different ways. I'm often the first person to record the episode, so there's no context yet for like if I'm running, if I'm whispering, if I'm yelling at him. So we'll try it a bunch of different ways. And then they layer everything on, and months later, we'll come back for round 2, and there'll be like a scratch animation, and we'll have reworked certain lines, and you'll plug those in and do some pickups, and then later, you'll be doing some pickups that are like set to the animation, so it'll be like you have to fit it in this amount of time and make it try to match the flap of the animation, and then you come in for like Walla, which is like extraneous, you know, like huffing, puffing, running, screaming, that kind of stuff. But yeah.
What's it called? Walla?
Walla, yeah.
Is that short for something?
I'm sure it is. I don't know what it is. I'm not a good enough person, like I'm not a good enough voiceover artist to tell you, but I think.
You don't think, but it said Walla on the schedule.
So. Yeah. Like, I mean, literally, like, I think the first time I ever saw it, they were like, okay, so we're going to bring you in for Walla. And I was like,
okay. Like, you're like, Walla's a character.
Yeah. I was like,
what are the sides?
Yeah. I was like, okay, great. I'm super ready to do whatever you like, throw at me. And then I came and it was literally like, grunt, run, jump. Run, hit a wall, fall down. And it's crazy because you're like, like, it's a situation. But you like spend 2 hours doing that and you're like, what did I just get paid for? Like, this is the weirdest job I've ever had.
So weird.
That's so great.
Yeah. So cool.
That's
it's
fun.
So weird.
Yeah, I think Foley artists, like VO artists and Foley artists are like 2 things that I would, in a different life, I would head in that direction. Because I think like just figuring out, you know, like, oh, I'm breaking bones. But I got to crunch lettuce.
So cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Foley artists are
fascinating. Are
absolutely incredible.
So
like
incredible.
The tricks that they have
up
their sleeves. But. So recording on a Sunday, and actually 2 days ago was National Coming Out Day, and yes. So for those listening, happy Coming Out Day. If you actually decided to come out, and I was hoping and wondering if anybody here at the table would be willing to share their coming out stories.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, Ramon did a post about it on his Instagram.
Yeah. Well, I took these photos. I did a photo shoot with L. Morgan Lee of Blue Photography.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, let's do some photos, like some dance photos, like in dance belts. And I was like, okay, sure. So I was like, I don't know when I'm ever going to post these photos. You know, like I got these photos, when I'm going to post them. And I felt like Coming Out Day was like appropriate. Mm-hmm. I thought the photo that I posted was a freedom of expression, if you will.
Yeah. And gorge.
Thanks.
Lovely.
Thank you. I'm not usually one to like long caption, but I was just moved that day you know, it being Coming Out Day. I was 15 years old. My dad's a pastor in Los Angeles, and I was messing around with someone at church as a child. And I told my youth leader, and pretty much after a few months of me like entrusting her with me being gay and telling her that I was like messing around with someone at church, she like met with me and my parents together and like told my parents for me.
Ooh.
Which was probably the worst thing that someone could do to a child without fair warning. She's like, hey, like, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. She's like, let's get lunch at 4 o'clock. I'm like, okay, great. I get home about like 3:30. I'm like, hey, mom, what are you doing? She's like, getting lunch at 4 o'clock with, I'll call her Susie. And I'm like, okay, great. I was like, me too.
Can you get
like,
a ride?
Doorbell rings. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Open the door. She's like, we're telling your parents right now. I was like, are you serious? Needless to say, it was difficult in that my parents, they didn't freak out or anything. They're trying their best to understand what all of that meant. Again, my dad is a pastor, so he lives by like transparency. So literally a couple of weeks later, he gathered all of the leaders of the church and pretty much told them, hey, like my son's gay. He's been messing around with this person at church so that you hear it from me instead of hearing it among other people at church. Mm-hmm. Hated that so much as a 15-year-old. I get it. But like, I was like, well, shit, you know? And that's kind of what that was. I luckily was a junior in high school, so I was able to like just dive into rehearsal, and I picked up a couple of more extracurricular activities. My older brother was also someone that I came out to who knew already and was just very loving and accepting. He's also my very best friend to this day. And then again in college, I feel like I had to come out a few times with my parents. Like maybe they're like, okay, like he's a teenager. I went away to school. I was dating someone at the time whose mom was crazy and threatened to call the police on me because she couldn't find her son. One day, and I told my mom, I was like, mom, this lady is crazy. I'm not sure what she's going to do. You know, they were very Southern Baptist. So she was like, okay, great. I was away at school, so there wasn't much that my parents could do or say at that point. And then I actually brought my boyfriend home when I was 26 years old. And that was like, me as an adult being like, hey, guys, I tried this 2 other times. I'm not really sure where we were with all of that. Because there weren't too many conversations happening beyond, like, them, like, dodging and, you know, not really talking to me about it. Man, I brought my boyfriend home at the time. And I was like, yeah, this is it. Remember the other 2 times. Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, do you have any advice that you would give anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, the hardest part.
2 days late right now, but.
The hardest part was being a teenager at church with so many people that knew this about me and weren't contributing in any positive way. Just trust yourself and love yourself and continue to feed yourself the things that you need. And there will be so many people that will have so many things to say, but you may not realize it now, those people don't matter. You know, I like to tell people, if they aren't paying your bills, if they don't feed you, or if you don't properly like sleep with them every night, quite honestly, anything else I give you is an extension of myself. And I don't owe you anything. So by all means, you look at yourself in the mirror every night. And as long as you're okay with yourself, that's all that matters. You know, you wake up every day and the things that you do for yourself that day are what last and what matter. And everybody else around you doesn't matter if they aren't contributing in a positive light.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Elliot? My coming out story was a little bit different. I have always, first of all, I've always like kind of like resented the idea of coming out. because it, I think, I hope that one day we'll get to a place where, like, coming out is not a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it shouldn't be a thing. Like, no one has to come out as straight.
It just assumes.
It just is assumed. Yeah. So, like, the idea of coming out, I've never loved. So my story is a little different, though, because I have, there was a period of like 3 years in my family where there was a coming out every year. So like my junior year of college, my brother came out, and it was basically in a conversation where my mom was like, and she, this is years ago, so she's changed now, you know, very different time, but where she was like, this is, I saw this on Facebook and on social media, and what is this, like, what's going on? And so My brother kind of came out to her kind of in a similar way that you came out to your parents, where it was just kind of, it had to happen.
Yeah.
And that was a lot harder for my mom at that point. She was like reading a lot of like religious literature on what to do in those situations. And that was kind of a tough time for my family. When that was a tough time, I was like dealing with that being a tough time and knowing that, like, you know, I'm also going to have to do that at some point. So mm-hmm. it's probably not going to be easy for me either.
Sure.
The next year, my uncle, who was in his 40s, came out to my family, and it was kind of a big coming out. It was like, I'm gay. I've been dating my partner for 7 years, and I'm also moving to Florida to live with him and work together.
Wow.
So it was a lot. That was a big coming out. And that kind of like it all kind of laid the groundwork in everyone being really understanding and kind of seeing all of the pieces kind of come together. So by the time that I came out, I like to like say that everyone stole my thunder, because it was just kind of like a non-event. But it was very easy. I mean, it was just a conversation with my mom where we kind of talked about it. It wasn't me being like, I have something to tell you, you know what I mean? Like, very dramatic. It was just kind of a conversation of like, you know, when it's your business, when I'm dating someone and I care about them, you're going to know. But as of now, I mean, I'm the same person, so I don't need to tell you every aspect of my life right now. And times have changed so much so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I encourage everyone to take your own time, take your own path in it, and only come out if you think you should. And there are so many different ways that there are so many different, you know, crayons in the crayon box. And you've just got to, like, take your time and know that there's no rush, and you can just be yourself, and that's good enough. You don't have to try and be anything else. You don't have to put anything on yourself, any pressure or anything like that. Just be you. And I can't wait until National Coming Out Day doesn't exist anymore, because coming out doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good point. It's just everything is kind of assumed one way, and then you have to, correct everybody.
Yeah.
Like, Dana, you identify as straight, right? We're talking about your husband.
I do, yeah. But I would say definitely consider myself an ally, but yeah, it's weird to me as well, because I've been surrounded by it for so much of my life, and it just seems like a non-thing. I mean, I went to a theater camp, so again, there was like, there were 10, 11-year-olds who were, we used to joke that like, they used to make us stay out of the boys' building, but we were like, you guys. Like, nothing's happening if we go into the building.
Yeah.
So it was such a non-thing to me, even though I was in a suburb of Michigan and it wasn't necessarily commonplace in my high school. But, you know, as an ally, I do, I recognize that these days exist because there are days of visibility for people who, in a lot of parts of the country that we live in and the world, feel invisible. Mm-hmm. And so I see why it's great to celebrate the visibility, but I agree. I hope that we get to a place where that's unnecessary, because you can just be whoever you are and be accepted everywhere you are.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay, so we got to get you guys over to your show. So we're going to skip over here into my standard closing questions that I ask everybody on the podcast. So it's three questions, and I'll ask each of you. Actually, let's start with Dana. Very simply, first, what motivates you?
What motivates me? The people I love. And my dogs.
Ramon?
Come back to me, actually.
All right, Elliot.
What motivates me? Right now, just being right now, I'm really motivated by being surrounded by something I love doing and something that I consider that something that encompasses all of my favorite things about being an actor, which is just like making people laugh, telling an awesome story, and being around cool people. So that's motivating me right now to keep doing those things.
Ramon, back to you.
Great. I'm motivated by, I guess, the passion and love for theater and the idea that there's discovery almost every single day. Like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. Oh, I didn't know I could explore that. I didn't know I could, you know, there's so many things about myself that I still don't know. And I think being able to dive into those things every day in a new light motivates me.
All right. Yeah. So pay attention to the next question because I'm coming to you.
Okay.
Elliot, we'll start with you here. What advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
I said this the other day to Talkback and it just like was resonating with me. Work hard, but don't work too hard. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. Like I was very hyper-focused when I was younger and like so like set on this goal and like working hard to achieve it when I was young. Like that's not super normal, but a lot of us can relate to that. And I realize more and more how important it is to just like have fun and just like like enjoy life. So work hard, but don't work too hard. Right. And stay a fan. That's my favorite. Yes. Stay a fan.
Dana?
I think the best advice I would have is to figure out a way to constantly redefine what success is, because this business is a very long road and a long journey, and people peak at different times, and you'll watch people shoot to the top really quickly and then not work for 2 years, and you'll watch people who work consistently, and everybody's journey is really different. So I think the thing that keeps me going, at least, is, you know, Broadway's amazing and I'm thrilled to be here. But it also took me a long way and a long time to get here. And so you just have to figure out how to make each thing important and why are you doing each thing. And I think you'll figure out that you're more successful than you think at most stages of the game.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Ramon?
I would tell my younger self, theater student person, to just keep going. Keep going. Again, like Dana said, this road is very long and very hard. It can get discouraging. But just keep going, keep working hard, keep practicing. And also, if you have other talents and hobbies, dig into those too. Like, lean into those things as well, because you never know how those things will serve you. And I do believe that to be a great artist is to be a well-rounded person as well.
Yeah.
So, like, love your art, work hard at that. But also, like, don't be afraid of the world around you and other things around you.
All right. So, final question. I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
If you can only see one show for the rest of your life,
oh my god!
But you can see it as many times as you want.
Oh my god! This is no.
Oh my god!
What would you see?
Woof! That's not even like what would you listen to. It's what would you see?
Yeah.
Not fair.
It can be something that's gonna make me sad.
I wish I was videotaping this. All of you just,
I know,
like,
I'm like stressing so, out.
Because
like,
I think so also many. The three of us, you have three people in particular who are huge musical theater fans and nerds and have been listening to cast albums since we've been like four.
Yeah, since forever.
This is challenging. We're not those people who just started and
I'm like stretching.
Like, the 90s.
Call me a clam, but I think it would be 42nd Street.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to say the original production that does the ballet at the end, not the staircase, because I love only because it's such a production. There's so many production numbers. Mm-hmm. Like I love a show with like 8-part harmonies, like big dance numbers, so many leads. Like I just love a big show, and it's so intact and it's worked for so long, and I just love that. And I would just be there so happy every single day. Yeah,
Dana.
I'm like sweating because it's like, how do you live in a world where you can't see a Sondheim show over and over, or a world where you can't see She Loves Me? But I think I'm going to say Gypsy.
Oh, sure. The great American musical.
Yes, it's perfect.
Nice. Okay, Elliot.
I'm going to say this kind of shocked me, but it was the first thing that came to my mind, The Drowsy Chaperone.
Oh.
Oh.
I would see The Drowsy Chaperone over and over again. It gives me all my musical theater nerdiness, love, and it's funny, and it's also one act.
And let's be real, the most important thing is 110 minutes.
Most important.
All right, so how can we find you online?
You can find my podcast online at the Broadway Podcast Network. That's Equity One, Broadway's Happy Hour. But you can find me, Elliot, on everything at Elliot Maddox. That's two L's, two T's.
Dana.
I'm at D Steinface, D-S-T-E-I-N.
Face. Steinface, yeah. Yeah. Ramon.
And I'm at Ramon Deshaun. That's RamonEDeshon on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, right. And of course, Beetlejuice is playing at the Winter Garden Theater. Everybody go to BeetlejuiceBroadway.com, get your tickets. You can get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. Show your support at thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon. Of course, this is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, so go to bpn.fm/TTP, our handy short link to go visit me there. You can get theater_podcast on Instagram and Twitter, facebook.com/officialtheaterpodcast. There's so many ways. Listen, subscribe, please leave a rating. I love reading the ratings. This is edited by Matthew Hendershot, and of course, Jukebox the Ghost. A big thanks to them for the intro and outro music, and then thank you to Ramon, Dana, and Elliot for being here. This has been so much fun.
Yeah. Thank you for having us, Alan.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.